to do what he did was the environment, the climate of impunity. There's a war in Europe. Turkey's military might be needed. Erdogan could play a role in EU's new defense plans. He has drones. He has troops. The geography is behind him. Netanyahu just broke another ceasefire. He kills and kills. There's no impunity. I mean, there's no impunity, he's not a political pariah. And Trump dismantled America's democracy. He keeps doing that every day. He is mimicking Erdogan's playbook. Like, only the ones that really watched Turkey in the last decade and a half would realize that it took more than a decade to dismantle a Turkish institution to capture the state. But Trump is doing the same. And it is that public now on the streets in Turkey is our only hope.
Turkish political scientist Ezgi Başaran, associate faculty member at Oxford University, speaking to us from there. Her Substack is Angle, Anchor, and Voice. We'll link to the full interview on what's happening in Turkey today at democracynow.org. As we conclude our show, a very happy birthday to Nermin Sheikh, our dear Democracy Now! Co-host. We miss you, Nermin. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio. KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. Come join us Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. here at the station for KBOO's April Fools for Fools First Friday Arts Walk for the eccentrics, the clowns, and the freaks. Enjoy an evening of art, live music, vendors, performers, food, drinks, and more. That's Friday, April 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, Oregon. Can't wait to see you there.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the band.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, we have an update on the expanding Israeli slaughter and genocide in Palestine. Also, Professor Ron Lopez from Sonoma State University comments on Trump's shutdown of the education department and the multiple negative implications for kids of color. Meanwhile, Greenpeace slapped hard as it loses a $660 million slap suit in North Dakota in the context of the Standing Rock protests against Energy Transfer Corporation. And what about those recently unredacted and released Kennedy files? Anything worthy of another look back? Some folks say, yeah, we should take a look. We'll take a little look. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I do want to credit again every once in a while Charlie Lang, who did the new opening of the show and closing of the show, the music, original music. Charlie Lang is a musical genius, and he sort of lets go towards the end of the music when sometimes we play it. Profound. We appreciate his music, his work, and his continuing creation. You are listening, speaking of creation, you are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and thinking and learning and growing, and somebody who knows a lot about that, who's devoted his life to it, is Professor Ron Lopez. He is known here in the Bay Area, working with Sonoma State University, Professor Chicano in Latino Studies, and many, he wears many hats, working with the students and encouraging them to take their own stand in life, to believe in themselves. Ron Lopez, the kids, the young people are being tested now because obviously the fascists, they start with what they think is the easiest target in terms of ripping off the society and moving wealth upwards. And that, of course, has to do with education and the guarantee that everybody might get a shot at some version of an equal education. Where are we, Professor? What does it mean to shut down the education department? Take a little bit of time to explain what this means to you and your work.
Well, I teach at the university, Sonoma State University. I've also taught at junior colleges before that. And what this means to me, I also attended all public schools. And this is going to be a pretty large scale transformation if they're successful doing this. I don't know if, like other programs that the current administration has tried to dismantle, if they'll make a big statement and a big flourish and then pull back a little bit. That is a possibility. It's also possible that they're going to proceed, and there has been, especially among Christian nationalists and educational conservatives, a shift towards private education, the privatization of education, towards school vouchers, and to sort of move towards defunding public education, because people who get vouchers are getting money that would otherwise have gone to public education, which is much more efficient. The story or the myth is that schools are inefficient. Whether or not that's true, it's a much bigger bang for the buck than the private schools, which are also primarily for the people who are already privileged. The federal contribution to elementary and secondary education is only about 8%, but that also contributes to things like the school lunch program, Head Start, and these help all Americans. Education is available all over the country. And if there are places in the country where there's a very small youth population, there will no longer be a need. You know, the local municipalities may say, well, without federal funding, we can't afford to have a public school, and they'll simply shift towards all private schools. And so we really don't know yet just how extensive this is going to be. But what I see is an end to programs for the disabled, an end to programs which, for example, funding of programs like sports programs that get publicly funded, possibly greater control by localities over public libraries and over curriculum. Curriculum has been a major point of contention, as we've seen with ethnic studies and legislation like Assembly Bill 1468, which suggests that a political body, a non-academic group, a committee will be able to control how ethnic studies is defined and taught at the four-year college level in the state of California. So I see everything in the education system that is designed to help the average student or the needy student. And this could even be something as simple as buses or voucher programs for public rides. Here in Sonoma County, students can ride the buses for free. All they need is a student ID card. And so things like this may end up going away as in so much as they have funding or support of the federal government. And while the current administration is saying we're going to return education to the state, this means that states like Florida, where they have a very conservative governor, or Texas or Louisiana, will be able to impose very politically motivated policies. Now, this already happens to some extent, but it will be done with greater independence on a state and local level. And it will also mean much reduced funding. So regions and school districts that have money and have a strong base of support in their in the local public will be able to fund those schools, and districts that have that are poorer districts or that have smaller number of youth may find themselves without school districts at all. So I'm really concerned that this is something that we can't even measure yet. It is such a grandiose and destructive plan insofar as what I've heard so far. And I think this is going to see a major transformation of our public school system nationwide.
And we're speaking with Professor Ron Lopez. He's on the faculty staff of the Sonoma State University, Professor of Chicano and Latino Studies. We're talking about I believe he actually formally did it yesterday, shut down a good part of the education department. Trump did, is the current president of the United States. How much does that mean? Help us understand. Now, we've talked about this a little bit, but it's really crucial. The amount, even though it doesn't seem like a great amount of money, it, oftentimes this support at various levels makes the difference, whether a student and a young person makes it or doesn't.
I think that it's going to go even if there's a funding question, and that's one thing. But there are other things, such as there are now districts which are saying, and states that are saying, we're going to be teaching biblical studies in the public schools. Wow. And the states that want to do that are going to be able to do that now. That takes resources away from, the teaching of whether it's history or the sciences or other things of that sort. And the politicization of our basic K through 12 education, we literally can't see everything yet, but there are even things like programs for disabled students, English as a second language, accommodation for disabled students that come through school districts. The things like the school lunch program, that, you know, is something that is so serious. If we say, there's a district here in this county that has a very low income population, that are all working class, maybe farm workers, maybe industrial workers, and the kids go to school, their parents have had to work either overnight shifts or work long shifts, and they come to school and they're hungry, and if there's not a free lunch, this means that there will be stratification, like increasing class stratification. We already see this in some school districts where there are the kids that can pay for the lunch plan, and then the kids that can't pay for the lunch plan get a cheese sandwich. And so there's already places where we're seeing the sort of expression of class politics playing out in the day-to-day functioning of these schools. Now, what's this going to mean in the long term? While the political agenda that's being expressed is, let's make America great again, if we're going to dismantle and harm our system of education and allow it to fall below the low state that it is already in, I personally believe we're going to be in even greater trouble than we are today. The education systems in countries across Europe, China, are far superior to those of the United States. And we really need to stop presuming that what we're doing already is working when we can look around the world and see successful systems operating. But if, for example, the teaching of history, if we don't teach history honestly, then people are going to not understand, for example, the processes of historical events. There's sort of, I could go into a lot of examples of this, but the learning the sciences, learning math. One of the reasons why, for example, we don't have free healthcare in the United States, and why our healthcare system is so stratified, is because if we were to have public health, sort of like welfare, if we were to have public health system that equally served everybody, this means that, you know, for example, African Americans and immigrants of all nations would also be served. And there are a lot of people, especially conservatives, who will say, well, I don't want to pay for that person's education because I, in their imagination, they say, I work harder, I did more, I earned my way. Now I don't want to have to pay for what somebody else gets. If we talk about the health system in Canada or, you know, again, Europe, other places, where people go and, you know, they come back to the United States and say, oh my gosh, I didn't have to pay the bill when I had to have, you know, the phone set or something of that sort. The education system that we have is like that. It's an investment in the future of this country and in the future of every individual in this country. If we think of it as a competition in a zero-sum game where I want my kid to do better and have more resources than all the other kids, then we're missing the point of a public education, because it's like, it's that old saying, rising tide lifts all boats. And it's an investment in the future. So for example, if you have if you plant a kernel of corn and you get a corn stalk, there can be five or six, cobs of corn on that stalk. That one kernel of corn produces several hundred kernels of corn. And that's what education does. That's what education funding does. And undermining the Department of Education is going to undermine that investment in the future.
It's amazing. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, speaking with Professor Ron Lopez of Sonoma State University. We're talking about, among the things, Trump did go ahead and shut down large chunks of the Board of Education. I think he made it formal, part of it formal, yesterday. This is, I guess we should mention a little bit, this is was founded under Jimmy Carter. Why? Was it a good thing? How do you evaluate it, Ron?
Well, I think having a Department of Education, I think it is a good thing. We still, in my personal opinion, there is still too much politicization of the school system because of how much the school policy happens at the district level. And like right now, one of the things that's going on is that conservative groups are challenging books, and they don't. This is not just like this person challenges book and this other person challenges other book. It's actually a movement to challenge books in the public, in public and school libraries, and in school curriculums. One of the premier examples of this was the case of the Tucson Unified School District Mexican American Studies program, which was very successful. The students were doing very well and being admitted to colleges, but because it challenged, it was teaching from a Chicano studies model, and because it wasn't teaching a conventional version of the curriculum, it was dismantled. It was declared illegal, and it was dismantled, and the faculty were fired. That's another thing that's going to happen. Is if you are going to think
right, and they left the essentially they left the kids and the parents crying in the dust.
Yeah,
I mean, it was brutal. Yeah. The way they shut down that program, they were terrified,
and they literally went. They took books out of kids' hands, boxed them up in front of the kids, and canceled the program. And, you know, one of the sayings that came from the Zapatista, the movement out of Chiapas, Mexico, was they thought they could bury us, but they did not know that we were seeds. And so people from that school district went out and did training, and actually those programs have expanded as a consequence of that. But notwithstanding, there was a tremendous amount of harm done, because all the future children in that district do not have access to that high level of education and those dedicated teachers. If someone wants to be a teacher and says, oh, I want to be a public school middle school teacher, one of the hardest jobs there is, are you going to want to go into an environment where you're underpaid and where there are all these constraints and there are attacks on the teaching profession and on the schools? This is another one of those challenges. And we already know that rural districts are often underfunded and don't have proper resources. But the attacks on education and the shift towards charter schools and towards privatization is an ongoing conservative agenda. And really, I mean, part of me wonders, like, what is their motivation? Simply that they want to control the curriculum so that the population will only know what they've been told. It's one of the things that you hear sometimes. People will say, they'll say, well, you know, you don't need to go to college. You could just go to trade school and get a trade right. degree and do this. And well, the people who say that, the wealthy advocates of those positions, are the same people who are sending their kids to private school. Yeah. So they're saying that in public and they're advocating for that in public, but when it comes to their kids, I'm talking about the wealthy advocates of these types of policies. When it comes to their kids, they're sparing no expense to make sure that their kids get the best possible education. It reinforces this sense of upper class hegemony, and it's harmful for the average person. When I read about, for example, schools in Finland or Norway, that are extremely high quality schools and how they function there, it's an entirely different story and entirely different outcome than the United States. When Americans go abroad and they speak to people with just, you know, a high school degree, from most of the European countries, it's often encountered that, you know, the Europeans have a much deeper and more sophisticated knowledge of world history, because they deal with these things a little bit more honestly. It's a little bit less American exceptionalism. America was always the best at everything. Recently, I think, was it the spokesperson for the White House said to Belgium, you'd be speaking German right now if it was not for us. And the Europeans had been fighting that war for years beforehand. The Russians did a lot of the dying in the Second World War. The U.S. was really the last player on the field in the Second World War.
Well, listen, my learned professor, we're out of time.
Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to let people know that it's always a joy to speak with Professor Ron Lopez of Sonoma State University in Lightning. The battle continues, Ron and Professor, and we're going to count on you to come back and continue to interpret what's happening on the ground level. Can I just ask you the short version of how are the kids doing? How are the young people doing? Are people afraid of the times?
I haven't been able. We just came off spring break, and I haven't been able to gauge that yet. But I'm concerned about I am concerned about this, about, you know, the sense of hope that might be lost for some students. For example, having trouble with FAFSA, the federal student loan application process. This has been a problem for the last 2 years, and that it just by itself is inhibiting some students from being able to attend college.
Yeah.
So there are real problems, and there are solutions, and our current government is choosing to go in a direction that is not in the direction of a democratic education for all.
beautiful. Listen, we appreciate help. Help keep us educated as we follow right along. We have been speaking again with Professor Ron Lopez. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a short musical break. When we come back, we'll talk with Jennifer Lowenstein about you guys got a call on an ongoing expanding genocide. The whole world is really watching, but nobody's doing a damn thing. Stay with us. To Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Ennis Bernstein. You hear this show every weekday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time over the Pacifica Radio Network. That's KPFA in the Bay Area. And we are happy to be speaking to you over these free speech, no holds barred, truth to power airwaves, the People's Radio Network. We don't answer to corporations. We are happy to welcome back, and really lucky to be able to welcome back Jennifer Lowenstein. She has been many things, former Associate Director of Middle Eastern Studies and Senior Lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's, I believe, speaking to us today from Tucson, Arizona, and has spent much time where people are dying all the time, probably even as we speak. Jennifer, the situation is not very good in the totally and thoroughly locked down Gaza Strip, which is under heavy bombardment. Whoa, let's start there. What does that look like?
It looks, it looks exactly like the disaster that it is. In fact, today when I was watching some of the news, somebody filmed the line of trucks, of humanitarian aid trucks, trying to get into Gaza. And this line just goes on and on and on. So what we can assume is that so much is being withheld. A lot of that stuff is just going to spoil. You know, it's not, there's no sign that it's actually going to get into Gaza. In the meantime, there are massacres. Sorry about my voice, it's allergy season. There are massacres taking place in the south, in the central strip, and in the north. And, you know, I think most people have heard that over 700 people have died in Gaza just in the last week. There was a massacre in Rafah yesterday as people were literally prevented from leaving, where the military, the Israeli military, was firing at people indiscriminately. There was the bombing of Nasser Hospital 2 days ago, in which there was a targeted assassination. An American surgeon was there to witness it and said he believes he escaped with his own life because one of the people who died was a 17-year-old patient of his. And there's no sign on the horizon of this ending because, contrary to some reports, Israel has no interest whatsoever in reestablishing a ceasefire.
Israel, you know, has, as usual, manages to be the one who they had no choice but to go back to war because the Palestinians were unreasonable. But the Palestinians would just want to stay close to the agreement. They were ready to for part two. Well, the Israelis weren't ready for part two, were they? And it was never meant to be.
No. Well, and I think that's something that people should understand. Hamas did not ruin this ceasefire. It didn't abrogate any of the terms. It's really discouraging and very disheartening to see our news media still talking as if the ceasefire ended because Hamas wouldn't abide by it. In fact, what happened, besides the fact that Netanyahu and his closest allies have been trumpeting since the ceasefire was signed, that they had no intention whatsoever of going through with the second phase, because the second phase involves a complete cessation of hostilities, in other words, an end to the war, and the withdrawal of all forces, of Israeli forces, from the Gaza Strip. Well, certain elements of Netanyahu's cabinet have refused to have anything to do with that. They only rejoined the government when Netanyahu ordered the military to go back in with its bombs and weapons and start all over again. So what people need to know is that Hamas was not behind this. And when Stephen Witkoff got on national international television the other day, basically what he did was back up Israel and also publicly admit, so to speak, that the U.S. was going along with Israel, that it considered it was Hamas's fault for not agreeing to the abrogation of the ceasefire agreement that everyone signed in January. So in other words, the agreement on January 19th that was put into place was abrogated not only by Israel, but also by the U.S. They went against their own agreement. And, you know, that doesn't inspire a lot of trust in America as an honest broker of any kind.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't. We're speaking with Jennifer Lowenstein, talking to her from Tucson, Arizona. She spent a lot of time in the Middle East, in the places that we are talking about and that we oftentimes talk with her about. Jennifer, the Gaza Strip is slaughter central. I don't know how they can justify continuing to drop bombs and do these slaughters, but clearly while all this is going on in Gaza, they don't waste any time and are not wasting any time. I mean, if anything feels like an ethnic cleansing, it's what's going on in the West Bank. They want to change the name.
Well, ethnic cleansing on steroids. I'm sure listeners heard that one of the directors of No Other Land was beaten by settlers yesterday in the village of Sousia in Masafer Yatta, and then detained by Israeli police. You know, that happens, but these settler attacks are happening day in and day out. And, you know,
I just want to be very clear about what we're talking about here. We're talking about a recipient of an Oscar for a documentary filmmaking at the most recent awards ceremony. He was in the West Bank, he was recognized, and what happened?
He was beaten up very badly by right-wing settlers and then hauled into an Israeli police car and detained. Now, I believe he has since been released, if I recall, but that's,
yes.
You know, the fact that it even got attention is because of the film garnering an Oscar. Event happens all the time in the West Bank. You know, you protest being beaten up, then you get detained. And if you don't do anything, you get beaten up because you're Palestinian. I mean, it's just god-awful. What I wanted to say also is that, you know, I'm not sure most people can comprehend, even through their best efforts, what the future holds for the people of Gaza. The Gaza Strip has been destroyed beyond recognition. I have friends in Rafah and Gaza City who talk about viewing the roads that their homes used to be on and saying to me, I don't even recognize the street. Nothing here looks the same. The Strip has been so wrecked and ruined that even without the current bombing that's going on, the reconstruction of Gaza is going to take 15 to 20 years. And yet here is Israel bombing it even further, and with bombs like bunker busters, you know, dropped on tents. I mean, what we have to ask ourselves, what is the real goal here? I think most of us know it's genocide, and that's clear. And the ethnic cleansing of 2.3 million people, probably into Egypt. But even if nothing happened, if there was nothing but stasis on the front, on the Gaza front, for the next 10 years, how would the people there be able to live? Israel is blocking every form of material aid, machinery that is needed to even begin repairing the Strip.
Yeah. Again, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, speaking with Jennifer Lowenstein. So, but there really is a concerted effort in the context of the West Bank, just to be clear, which is, I guess, about 8 times the size of Gaza. This is a very methodical attempt at an ethnic cleansing. It's provable, and everybody, you talk about the whole world watching. The whole world really is watching here.
Well, you know, and it's methodical, but it isn't. It's methodical in the sense that it's predictable, but what settlers and the army are doing on the ground is brutal and violent and reckless. It's destroying people's homes, it's cutting electricity, it's cutting off water supplies. You know, basically what's happening in some of the cities and towns of the West Bank is that they're being turned in to mini Gazas. And I expect there will be some kind of annexation of all or part of the West Bank in the next couple of months, especially as tensions escalate in the region. I don't think most people are aware that about a week ago, the U.S. ordered its third carrier strike group, its third aircraft carrier, the USS Vincennes, into the Persian Gulf. The last time there were 3 U.S. aircraft carriers called to the Persian Gulf was when we were on the brink of war. And from what I'm reading, you know, a lot of this is being focused on the Houthis. The Houthis are doing this, but Iran is responsible.
Yes.
Iran really isn't responsible. Yes, go ahead.
No, that's the sort of the heart of the matter. There's all this stuff, we're running out of time, but all this stuff about how now the Democrats are up in arms because the Republicans violated various national security rules, as if Trump, how many felonies was he facing for reading?
How many national security documents did he have in his bathroom?
Ridiculous. So does he care? Does anybody care? But here's the Democrats. They don't care about this genocide going on. But that how many people were killed? How many children were killed in the last week? 500? Over 5? I mean, it's unbelievable, the devaluation of human life. And it's these people are shredded by U.S. weaponry. Sorry.
That's right. And there was an essay in Haaretz, the Israeli journal, by a woman named Hanin Majadli, who basically made clear what our media won't, which is when Israel went back and started bombing Gaza again a week ago today, It also committed the largest child massacre in its history. Almost 200 children were killed in one night. And that didn't get any coverage here. If anything, you had spokespeople talking about, you know, 400 Hamas militants being killed. Well, I can tell you, 400 Hamas militants were not killed. 400 civilians were, and 200 of them were children.
Yeah, that's a fact. I mean, and this is, again, this is the flip of the news. You know, in the right-wing liberals and the reporters at MSNBC and all the other networks, this story, I mean, let me ask you about this. This little flip-flop Schumer thing. Well, everybody knows that Schumer is owned by the Israeli lobby. He's number one. He's there. He's all the way. Powerhouse in the Senate. Trump.
Schumer is just under
out,
yes,
Trump sorry. Come. Let me just say, Trump comes out of the corner. I've made this point before, but it's important. And he calls Schumer a Palestinian. He said he's not even a Jew. He turned his back on it. He's a Palestinian. And about 16 hours later, Schumer was like, all of a sudden, he was like voting with the Trumpians to keep the country going for the good of, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, Schumer is a basket case, but I think the use of the word Palestinian as a derogatory expression says everything about the intellectual and political climate in this country right now, which is despicable. I also heard Schumer basically say it's too bad that the Palestinians don't read the Torah, because if they did, they would have just let the Jewish refugees from Europe come in and live there. I mean, this is our... What's his position now? I mean, he's the main Democrat in the Senate. I'm just sitting back thinking, boy, we are so far away from finding any kind of civilized answer to these problems if these people stay in power.
All right. Final word that you would like to share with us, what you're watching out for, what's making you really nervous?
Well, I mean, what makes me nervous are the tensions building in the Gulf, because I think I don't think a war with Iran is imminent, but I think it's more possible right now than it has been in probably 25 years. But I also think that what's happening in terms of just the daily death and the horror in Gaza should be hanging on everyone's conscience.
Well, listen, here's what we want to do. We want to thank you for joining us. We have been speaking with Jennifer Lowenstein, much experience covering the Middle East, teaching about it as Associate Director of Middle Eastern Studies and Senior Lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Now she's based in Tucson, Arizona. And, you know, Jennifer, it's always good to have you with us. And I think we're going to have to watch this very closely. You know, I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. And if the arrest of activists and of Palestinian activists and those who support them is the current situation is any indication of what's to come, a lot of trouble.
Well,
I imagine
trouble.
It must worry you
Trump,
a little bit.
By the way, Trump ordered today that major universities hand over lists of all foreign students who participate in Palestine protests. That should chill everyone to the bone.
All right. Listen, take care, and we'll be in
you
touch.
Too.
Talk to you soon. Thank you for the good information. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We were at this time, supposed to be speaking with our good friend William Simpich, attorney, human rights activist. We had a lot we wanted to talk to him about, but we're having trouble making that connection. So I'm going to ask my producer and our technical director, music extraordinaire and guide, Mike Biggs, to find some music, and then let's see what we can do. Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, our guest fell through, so I thought I would invite you all to be our guest. We'd love to take some phone calls. You can write down the number now, 800-958-9008. I'd love to know what you're thinking about. Whatever it is, I really would like to hear what you're thinking about all that is going on. What your thoughts are in terms of what we need to know, where we need to focus, what kinds of information is crucial now, you know. So write down the number, 800-958-9008. How are you dealing with life in the age of Trump? Does it mean anything to you? Has it changed your life at all? Does it worry you that somebody's clearly is inclined towards fascism, neo-fascism, and who doesn't really appear to believe in the rule of law? Give us a call, 800-958-9008. How do you restrain, transcend? Do you read poetry as an alternative to you? Or are you one of those maniacs listening 24/7 to get the latest and the latest and the latest information, which I can understand because things in this room, in this world, are moving very, very quickly. Again, 1-800-958-9008. Give us a call. 1-800-958-9008. That's the number. I hope I wasn't saying the wrong one last time, but that's the number. That's the number, 1-800-958-9008. What is on your mind? Become our special guest today at 5:45 in the afternoon. If you're listening, you're hearing us from the Bay Area, San Francisco. We are the Flashpoint Show. You can check us out as a podcast. We are available at many levels in many ways. Right now, we're available through the phone. Love to hear what's on your mind. 800-958-9008. Please give us a call. Ed, join us on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. What's on your mind? I dare ask.
I've lived in Berkeley for 60 years. I have never, ever, ever. A beautiful town, beautiful city, beautiful country. What is happening right now, this is the darkest age I have ever seen. Government getting dismantled. people getting whatever. This is unbelievable. This is an inside job to get this country defeated. Donald Trump is really, he cannot be described, and he can't use fear. He is a Russian Trojan horse. They can't do that. I owned big company in Belgium for many years. I couldn't fire people at will. If I did fire people, I get hell from the IRS, from unemployment department. They're destroying this beautiful country. We have to stand up. We have to start an impeachment, not against Trump, but against all of the idiots and traitors that have betrayed all of us and destroying this beautiful country. War on education, war on government, war on science, war on humanity. And what Israel doing to the poor Gazans is inhuman. The Mongols destroyed the whole world, killed 6 million people.
Caller, Ed?
Say it again?
Ed, what do you think, of the Democratic response, sort of as characterized by Schumer? You know, they're terrible, yes, but we know they're going to shoot themselves in the foot, so we just have to step back.
They're awful. They're awful. They have not responded at all. They are on the take. It is AIPAC, bunch of slaves, puppets, taking money from AIPAC, destroying country. And the biggest victim, by the way, in that guy that's saying Israel itself. A lot of young Israelis getting killed every day, and also Israel perpetuating itself to exist as a civilized nation forever. It can't. Nobody can accept this. These are a bunch of killers and murderers and bloody things. Kids, 70 kids getting killed every day. What is the hell? What universe we live in today? This is just dark. Dark.
Thank you. Thank you, Ed. Really appreciate the very strong feelings. Gordon.
Great. Hi, Dennis. Fantastic. Thank you for having the show. I've been listening for decades and decades. I'm feeling like it's going back to, you know, our childhood in the 60s and 70s.
Have you with us, Gordon? Join us.
Can you hear us? Can you hear me?
Go on, please.
Okay, so I'm feeling that we want to get a big, huge peace movement going. And I'm also thinking, I'm trying to think of solutions here. And perhaps there's a Watergate moment where the person in the executive branch it'll take care of itself. I see broad coalitions on the consumer front. I'd like to see the Ralph Nader's group get together with the Bernie and AOC group and see if there's some common ground on the economy with the Democratic mainstream. From there, we can move the elections. From there, we may have a chance to bring more seats in Congress and therefore have a chance for, if they have to go to impeachment proceedings, barring a Nixon moment, then there's a chance. You know, the courts are the long shot. Let's look at how we can get the lower courts then to, again, be part of a broad coalition for peace and unity, and then maybe find some common ground with the anti-Trump Republicans. So I just want to get mindsets on solutions.
Some common ground, right? Gordon, you know, this is incredibly important what you are talking about. I'm going to, by the way, thank you for opening the door, Gordon. I'm going to let people know tomorrow we're going to play one of the, I've been tracking the speaking tour of Bernie and Ocasio from my hometown. Beautiful, you know, in Denver, 35,000 people showed up. In Tucson, 20,000 people showed up. Are people frustrated and they're taking them to Republican towns? So it is interesting. People are frustrated, but they're not. I've heard a lot of inspiration coming out of, once again, out of the grassroots. We just have to move those Democrats aside and really get a party that has a spine. Thank you, Gordon. David from Fresno in California, join us, please. Good to have you with us.
Good afternoon, Dennis. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Thank you.
The reason I'm calling is just that I'm really frustrated with the Trumpstoppel regime, like Trumpstoppel 2.0. This is like the Nazi Germany again of 1939. It's like the Fourth Reich with these fascist goons that we have. Now they're trying to like confiscate your phones at the border again when you're crossing through a port of entry or at the airport, which I think is none of their concern, only with the search warrant issued by a judge. That's what it should be doing. And it's just, it's running amok. It's like school districts scrapping all the special education funding for special needs students, migrant program, everything. Everything's going batwire with all this stuff with this Nazi fascist regime we've got. And I'm concerned because I work for the school district here in the city of Salinas. And it really concerns me because we work with transportation and I ride with the SPED kids. I'm an aide. And that concerns me because what if the district starts cutting off aides and drivers because the majority is all like SPED routes. And that's really concerning. And that's why I'm frustrated with this country and with the fascist totalitarian despot we got right now, the Trumpstoppel.
So where you are, David, it's having a direct impact in terms of what I hear in terms of the fears that have been drummed up by this extreme right-wing leadership in Washington, opening all those doors to do all the hate that you feel. I imagine this is reverberating in your neck of the woods.
Because right here in Salinas, in my district, I work for Salinas Union High School, and there's nothing said that they're cutting back funding or anything, but at a local school district outside of Salinas called Washington Union School District, which is over in the countryside of Salinas going towards Monterey, called San Venancio. It's like a ranch community by Toro Park, Fort Ord, and Highway 68 going towards Laguna Seca. And I heard on the local news that they wanted to shut down the Washington Union School, elementary school, at that place, and they wanted to put all the kids to Toro Park Elementary in the same district, but different schools at the other side of the highway, and they wanted to put some fourth and fifth graders to San Venancio Middle School, and the superintendent said he was going to cut back on the budget or something to save this district, and all of a sudden the parents started getting all peed off because of they were going to shut down, and they clamored against the superintendent, and the superintendent said he was not going to shut down the school after all.
Wow. David, that's very powerful. And are there things going on for people who are afraid, who have a lot of fears, who have these, we're not talking about paranoia here, we're talking about justifiable fear based on all kinds of threats and levels of threats. I'm wondering if there's a structures being created now. Are there, I don't know how to put this, are there escape routes?
To be honest, I haven't, they gave us like a letter at the district saying that like if we were to be stopped by ICE, that we're not allowed by the school district for without any reason or without any documentation from a executive order from a judge, we are not supposed to let the ICE agents on the bus. Now if they show their badge and a order signed by a judge to go in. So that's what they have given us so far. There hasn't been anything bad, like any kids, any ICE agents going towards the schools here in Salinas. And right here at Salinas Union High School, they said that they were going to have probation officers and security, campus security, alerting the district and to close off to ICE agents so they don't just waltz in like they own the place.
Right. Well, there's a lot going on, and we're going to be reporting on it tomorrow. We couldn't get it on today. We weren't sure what was exactly happening, but there's some stuff happening, and we'll be, please stay tuned. We'll be reporting on it tomorrow. Thanks for the time, David. We've got one more call from Berkeley. I think it's Ayuman in Berkeley. Is this, who is it?
This is Lauren.
Join us, please. We'd love to have you. We've got a couple of minutes for you.
Great. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, I think that the terror is really real. The fear is really real. And a lot of it is also intentional, of keeping us afraid and closed off and scared and in a lot of confusion. And so my question is like, where is the, like, what is the, what do we need to hold? What is ours to hold? And what is ours to protest and fight and work through? What anger is ours? But just knowing that the confusion that this administration is spewing out is incredibly intentional and incredibly divisive and dividing. And I know I'm going to sound like a Berkeley hippie right now, but I think that the importance is for us on the left or the liberals to try and come together, as well as those on the right and those on the conservative side have done, because that side has really coalesced in a powerful way, and we're seeing them taking over our government, we're seeing them taking over the United States and beyond. And the left and the liberals, we keep fighting with each other. There's so much infighting, there's so much pointing of fingers or wagging of fingers, like, you're doing this wrong, and it's keeping us really divided, and it's very, very intentional. And so my work, my attempt in this world is, how can we come together? What do we need to do? And I really enjoyed that you mentioned, like, what is the poetry you're reading? What are you doing? I'm leading a lot of, I've been doing this for over a decade, but I lead a lot of community singing gatherings.
Listen, can you get in touch with us, please? We're smack against the clock, but I'd like to pick this program and do part two up with you and figure out a way to do it. So please get in touch with us. It's Dennis Bernstein at kpfa.org. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and what an honor to broadcast to you over Free Speech Radio. Free Speech, the People's Radio Network, non-corporate, truth to power. Stay with us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4 special programming campaign. Check out all the great programs we're bringing you now through April 15th.